enjoy a good squeeze.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Margot.
I'm August.
And this is A Good Squeeze.
The show where we take a deep dive into the world of 007 and we squeeze a little of that James Bond into our everyday lives.
That's right. And this time we did it a little bit differently. We are currently noticing that there has been an influx of James Bond content and media as a result of this drought. There, we were very lucky that, you know, we kind of jumped on that boat relatively early. I mean, you know, to a certain extent. But this time we were able to witness this, a contribution to this influx of James Bond creatives by seeing a play, if you want to.
Yeah. So how we squeezed it into our everyday lives. I was walking to a convenience store. And on my way there, there's a business front. I think it's a hair salon or something. But in the window, they had a poster. And it caught my eye because it had like a British flag and a car. And it said in big letters, the real James Bond was Dominican. A play here in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And I was like, wow, that seems right up our alley potentially here on A Good Squeeze. And I scurried home and mentioned it to Margot. And I was like, would you want to go to this? And I don't even think you let me finish the sentence. He said, yeah.
That's right. LA Night, yeah. We did very little research, if any, prior to seeing this this play. It was at a local theater down here in Pittsburgh, and it was a new experience for us. We had never been to this theater, I don't believe. Mm-mm. And we knew nothing. It was called The Real James Bond Was Dominican, but we had no idea what it was going to be about. We didn't know if this was just a take on, you know, culture or race, or if it was James Bond heavy, if it was some kind of implication, some like social implication or whatever. But we were very lucky that it was all of that combined into one, very tastefully, very elegantly, and very dynamically put together by the wonderful Christopher Rivas. That was the playwright. It was a one-man show. There was a musician. He was playing the drums and the conga or whatever it was. And why don't you walk through the day for us if you remember any of it? We were so taken away that it's hard to remember, you know.
You know, it was one of those days where it was just a normal day. A work day, and you know, we had bought these tickets. And, you know, it was like work wrapped up. And it's like, hey, let's get
boogie.
A quick bite to eat and boogie. So we didn't, you know, we didn't set the table as one normally would for a good squeeze. We didn't eat Dominican food or anything like that.
But we didn't need to, because Christopher Rivas set the mood for us. Incredibly immersive experience. But sorry, I interrupted as usual.
So we got to the theater. It was a nice snowy eve here in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And coming into this theater, it was beautiful. It was like Marco said, a very like small kind of independent space. But they had a bar, and they had themed drinks.
Mm-hmm. They did the work for us.
Yeah,
it was great.
It was like I curated it. I think I had what was it? It was like a cranberry bourbon something or other.
Was it called the Goldfinger? Gold member? I don't know.
It wasn't Gold member.
No, definitely wasn't Gold member, but
it might have been called the Goldfinger. Yeah. And I wasn't going to have anything that evening, but they got me with the name.
That's right.
You know, so I got it. It was good. But yeah, we
it was an interesting group of people in the lobby, because
a very dynamic group, I guess.
A lot of diversity. Not one single type of person. There was the old theater crowd, you know, like a seasoned theater crowd, just, you know, for lack of a better term, a group of elderly folks in nice scarves and turtlenecks, you know, just hanging out on one couch, talking to each other like they've known each other forever and they're familiar with the scene. There was my future self eating, just inhaling a bag of chips, having a good time, like sitting by herself. I was like,
open mouth.
Open mouth, staring at everyone. I was like, yep, that's me right there. You know, she was a very sweet old lady. And, you know, there was us kind of, you know, hanging back, take, you know, people watching, et cetera, et cetera. Then there's a beautiful young couple, you know, clearly like a duo of friends.
Oh, wait, that was us.
Oh, wait. Oh, it was a mirror the whole time. You know, so dressed to a T, you could tell this was a, personally, I saw them and I was like, that is a James Bond inspired duo. They are clearly very interested in both the theater and the culture of James Bond and 007. And they were trying to squeeze a little 007 into their day, just like us.
As we all were, yeah.
So many people, different types. You know, I saw somebody from my old school that I ducked and covered. That's for sure. I'll say it because it's you know,
it's good stuff.
That's how I am. Just know, you know.
Did you pick up on my outfit?
No, I don't remember. I was so focused on me.
It was like, yeah, I was rocking this like outfit you got me, but it was
yes,
yeah, it was like a Pierce Brosnan inspired outfit from GoldenEye.
Mm-hmm. That's right, a nice sweater from Uniqlo, and your blue button up. Pop collar, or not pop collar, but like shown from outside the sweater.
Exposed collar.
Yeah. Thank you.
But we were looking snazzy.
It was nice that we were able to just kind of get ourselves together, move on to the theater. And they, again, like we said before, they did the work for us. They created tailored drinks, themed drinks, James Bond drinks. Let me say that 15 more times. We made our way into the theater, and it was a little theater. It was very cozy. There was, you were pretty, you know, it was just, it was chairs set up essentially.
Yeah. I remember like walking to the theater space. It was actually in a different building. There were like two theaters in here.
Yeah.
So you had to like go into the main building, and then you went outside to go into the actual theater. So we didn't really know what to expect. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was like not your typical stage. It was more just like a floor space, and there were levels of chairs.
For those of you who are familiar with theaters, it's kind of like when you have a main theater, you got a little theater. It's just a smaller space, with usually the stage is just on ground level. It's not like elevated or anything, and then you've got the chairs on risers, so you can seat a multitude of people. Typically it's on like in front of the stage on both sides of the quote unquote stage. And it's usually chairs just set up. It's a legitimate setup. You know, you can tell it's like you're about to watch a show. I don't want to make it seem like it was some kind of like ragtag, grassroots, whatever. Like, no, it was elegant, but you could tell this was more of an intimate performance. Yeah. And boy, was it.
Yeah, we walk in and on every seat there was a postcard. Or two postcards?
Two postcards, yeah.
Yeah. Paper, or not paper clip. What are those called? A clothespin.
Clothespin.
And then you had your playbill and stuff. Mm-hmm. But, so we sit down. We're like, what the heck are these? I remember you were exchanging postcards with other chairs. I'm like, picky. I want that one.
Yeah.
As you did it, I was like, yeah, who cares? But I was like, what if, like, particular seats were meant to have, because they were all different. I was like, what if particular seats are meant to have postcard?
They should have nail gunned it to the chair.
Yeah, that was my thought, too.
So sneaky Margos.
There should have been instructions.
Stuff like that.
You could have just taken them all.
Right. Like, some of them were really nice and some of them were not. And I wanted a really nice one. We will be showcasing those on our Instagram just to give you a little visual cue. But yeah, why don't you tell us about those postcards?
We'll touch on it here throughout. But the show, not only was it a play, and we'll get into what it was about here in a bit, but it was interactive with the audience in different ways and through like the use of different forms of multimedia, I guess. And these postcards were one of them. It was like a visual cue, it was a physical cue, but it had writing on the back, quotes, And throughout the show, you know, what's his name? Christopher. He would ask, like, hey, who, you know, people who have this postcard, will someone please read the back of it? Don't be shy. And it added to, like, some humor to the evening, mm-hmm. some levity, because, like, you know, it's like, don't everyone go all at once kind of thing.
He did a really good job of incorporating, like you said, he incorporated the audience. It was not necessarily, like, a call and repeat, but that's how he kind of instigated it. I forget what it was, but he said something, and we just had to, like, call back at him or something. And that's kind of how he, like, broke the ice. And mm-hmm. from there, he made it very clear. So, like we said, it was a one-man show. There was a man playing, like, different instruments to kind of set the tone and set the pace for the play itself. But Christopher Reeves wrote and directed it himself. He performed in it. And it was essentially his relationship as a Dominican man with James Bond and Hollywood in general, how a lot of pop culture characters that are white are based on I want to say, like, I don't know how to describe it. He put it so brilliantly, it made me feel dumb. How Hollywood is whitewashed. You take inspiration from different cultural backgrounds and essentially just putting it out as mm-hmm. like, oh, this is a white individual. And he talks about his relationship with that, which I thought was really interesting. Again, he did it in a way where it was so immersive. He brought in themes from his childhood. He brought in a lot of comedy, a lot of levity, but then he also touched on some darker topics. And it was such a beautiful cocktail mm-hmm. of dialogue and interpersonal relationships while also drawing in the audience to participate. It was like a full immersion into the world of James Bond.
Yes, indeed. And I mean, tell me if you agree with this, but it's not necessarily about this guy's relationship with James Bond. Mm-hmm. It sort of is. It's about his relationship with Porfirio Rubirosa.
That's true, yeah.
Who is a Dominican playboy from, like, the 30s, 40s, 50s, and who is, I say in, like, quotes, like, rumored to be one of the inspirations for James Bond. Mm-hmm. This was a real person who was, like, a playboy by trade. He was rich. He raced cars. He played polo. He was a womanizer. He mm-hmm. also was, an assassin.
Yeah. What do you call it when you're, like, bumping elbows with someone or whatever? It's when he was close to a lot of political figures who asked him for favors in relation to other political favors.
Yes.
No, political figures. My bad. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Exactly. And, you know, so I said in quotes, like, the inspiration for James Bond, because this guy sounds like he is James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through some research, it has never been said that this guy was Ian Fleming's inspiration for the character. There's been, they touch on it in the show, and it's speculated that the reason it hasn't been said that way, that this guy was the inspiration for James Bond, is because of his race, certainly of the time. And that's what the show really touches on too. The real James Bond is Dominican.
Mm-hmm. And when I was saying, like, his relationship, I'm trying to, like, piece it all together, because this was 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, and we've been meaning to, you know, get on this, but, you know, life happens. So we're just kind of piecing it back together. But his relationship with being Dominican, too, and how that is often, more often than not, with any cultural background, any ethnicity, heavily affected by media and popular media, as in Hollywood. And for him, it was seeing somebody who he admired so much. What was his name? Ruby Rosa, but he goes by Ruby.
Yeah.
Ruby, and his, although, you know, he was a playboy, he was admired, he was so close to so many powerful figures, he was still subject to being forced, essentially, to hide his Dominican, or he was Dominican, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. The real James Bond was Dominican. Margo, come on. To hide his features and to essentially whitify them. Like, he would bleach his skin, and he would, he was really, what did he do to his nose exactly? He got a nose job. That's what it was. Job. He got a nose job. And you mentioned the clothespins as part of the little package that we got with the postcards. They were holding it together, and we thought it was like, oh, so authentic and so like, you know, more.
I was like, it's just holding these postcards.
It was to me, it was unique because usually you use a paperclip, and I was like, oh, that's cool, clothespin. But he tied it back into the show. Apparently, a lot of Dominican individuals, not just Dominican, but, you know, individuals with. It's so funny. I heard the sirens, and I thought that was just part of the garage band. And I was like, wow, what an interesting effect. Sorry.
But our listeners won't hear them, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure. There's a siren right now. Yeah. So, yeah. But what was I going to say? He was talking about how a lot of, like, individuals with, like, who have darker skin and a wider nose, custom that they would do at night is they would sleep with a clothespin on their nose to make their nose smaller. And the way that he really did a great job interacting with the audience that way, because he asked us to take the clothespin and put it on our nose. And, you know, it was kind of a comedic moment where we're all like, ow, ow, ow. And he's like, you know, laughing along with us. And he brought it back into, like, it's funny, right? But imagine sleeping every single night being told that you're ugly, that you're this, you're that, and that this is going to be, this is, you know, inflicting pain onto yourself is what's going to get you accepted, that this is what you have to do in order to fit into society. And it really just brought this, like, he just juggled humor and, like, serious aspects of, you know, his show, like, so beautifully together. And I thought it was just really interesting. I'm sorry. I'm like remembering back and forth. My brain's kind of all over the place when it comes to this. I hope we're doing the show justice. If Christopher Rivas happens to listen to this episode, that would be really cool. But
it was masterfully done. It was a very unique experience. Like I said, he incorporated multimedia, whether it was these postcards, whether it was a clothespin, but also he had projections on a screen that, you know, had like birds flying around, or you know, like a shop front that he would like interact with and like open up, but it was a projection. You know, of course there was footage of like spy stuff and Ruby Rosa himself. But also he had props. You know, he told his life story essentially, like from the time he was young to the time he was like middle aged to now, and how he's, you know, like trying to make it as an actor, but you know, how it relates to him being Dominican, and how he viewed, like, you know, growing up, like certain idols, whether it's like someone who he focused on, James Bond, because James Bond's cool. He's got the nice car. He's got the girls. He goes on adventures. He wears the suits.
He's attainable, technically. He's the most realistic of all the superheroes and all the pop culture characters, technically.
So when he was able to like piece together, like, oh, this character is obtainable, except, you know, I'm Dominican. I'm different. Then he finds out about this Ruby. And he kind of idolizes this individual, and he goes on to, you know, research this guy. And although he did everything James Bond does, he is a person still.
Right.
And he dealt with hardships all the way to the end. And, you know, spoiler alert, but life history, this gentleman, he tragically died in a car accident, speculated to be like self-caused, like suicide.
He talked about it too in the play. He revered this individual, but he also was very honest about how he also inflicted harm on others. You know, he, you know, trigger warning for listeners, there was a, you know, physical abuse towards his, some of his, what do you call them, admirers or whatever,
partners.
And he mentioned it again. He address that in such a suave manner. This man, honestly, Christopher Rivas, you are James Bond. My goodness, just the way that he charmed the audience. That was something I also really appreciate about his performance, is he really charmed us. He just brought us into his world, and we were along for the ride. And that's the essence of James Bond, is, you know, you're just, he takes your hand and you say, hey, you do the rest. Jesus takes the wheel. You know, James Bond, take the wheel. That's essentially what Christopher Rivas did. And yeah, just in his admiration for Ruby, again, I can't remember his first name or his full name.
It's like Porfirio.
Okay.
Porfirio Ruby Rosa.
Porfirio Ruby Rosa. Man, I have a hard time with that.
Ruby.
That's right. It was just a really interesting take. It was such a unique take, and it comes to show how, like, this Bond drought, not having a movie, not having a whole lot of media influence, can really trigger, or not trigger, but prompt some fascinating creativity and some fascinating creative takes on James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's, you know, constant conversation about, you know, how Hollywood just tends to favor, I mean, obviously, favors white actors and white characters. And he found a way to link that with the origins of James Bond, with his childhood, with his relationship with being Dominican himself, with the relationship of others and how they navigate being from a different country, from a different cultural background in America. And he talked about his father and how his father was also very reminiscent of Bond in the way that he was able to adapt to whoever he was talking to, the code switching he mentioned, very much immersing himself within other individuals in order to essentially, like, get at their level, wherever, whatever level they were at, he could get on their level. And it was just a fascinating take on it, something I never thought of before, something that I'd never seen before too. It was hour and a half?
Yeah.
Hour and a half long monologue. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was quite the experience, and, you know, it was a delightful night out. Like I said, we didn't know what to expect. It was all done on a whim, which is, for Margot and I, usually like the most fun we have. Mm-hmm. Like, we love doing things on a whim. If you want to do something with us, you got to ask that day.
Yep. It's
more than likely we'll be like, yeah, let's do it.
That or 6 months in advance.
Yeah.
those are your two options.
So yeah, it was like, it was perfect for us. And also, like, what, I don't want to say what we represent with James Bond, mm-hmm. but it's us, like, you know, create the experience for yourself, you know, and squeeze it into your life. Like, you know, we don't have exactly things being given to us through James Bond. So we have to, like, make our own experiences,
which is the essence of James Bond. He makes his own experiences. He doesn't wait around for people to just hand him everything. He goes and gets it.
He waits for his mission.
Well, does he though? we'll talk about that in future episodes.
Yeah.
The behaviors of James Bond. That would be cool. Sorry, go ahead.
We'll have a guest who's a psychologist.
Yeah. Ooh, sorry. Hey, Christopher Rivas, if you want to be on our podcast, that would be really cool. One thing that I thought was really interesting when speaking of, you know, making your own experiences, when you're looking at the character of James Bond, and this play made me realize this, James Bond is a myriad of people. And what I really like about that is, because you can find so many different inspirations for James Bond, you can essentially make your own James Bond. Mm-hmm. If you decide, like, this is the kind of James Bond that I want, this is the kind of James Bond, this one, that one, no, this one, I don't like this one, so I want this one. Even in how many actors have portrayed him, it's really great how you can tailor this experience to really make it your own. And this play did it flawlessly. He wasn't talking about Sean Connery, Roger Moore, Pierce, good old Timmy D. He didn't talk about these guys. He talked about Ruby. He talked about how he's the reason, I think, Ian Fleming did the whole shaken not stirred, right? Sacudido no revuelto, or something like that.
I take all that with a grain of salt, just because it's never been confirmed. Maybe.
That's true. I have, you know me and recency bias. That is my, I got to make a shirt. You know me and recency bias. That's it. But that's the thing. He put on such a great performance that it just totally convinced me. I was like, mm-hmm. yes, you're correct. Absolutely. Now, there are so many different inspirations for James Bond, like I said. But once again, he made a whole play about this guy. He did an hour and a half about this dude who I had never heard of, you had never heard of, you being a lifelong Bond fan, me being a little novice lady. And I thought it was just a really great example of how you can just, again, however you want to squeeze Bond into your life, you can do it. If you want to do it in a way that is You know, more inherent to your own culture. Absolutely. If you want to dig into something that's completely different than who you are, you can absolutely do that. If you want to draw parallels to your own life, if you want to draw parallels to a different person who you also admire, you can create, turn them into James Bond. And James Bond is what you make of it, essentially. Well, to a certain extent, as a novice.
Mother Teresa. She's my James Bond.
Yeah. Hey. We could find a way.
To your point.
One thing that I thought was also really, really great, and maybe we could do a verdict on this. It was when you looked at the crowd, like I mentioned earlier, there was just such a hodgepodge of people. I cannot emphasize how many different people were in this audience. I was expecting either James Bond fans or theater fans. I couldn't tell who was who. That's not true. I could tell who was a James Bond fan. I could tell who wasn't. This play attracted so many different people, mm-hmm. and you didn't need to know about James Bond. You really didn't. I mean, most people know about James Bond. He's up there with the most famous characters in literature of all time. But he held our hand and took us along for the ride. We had to do no work whatsoever.
What I think is as beautiful about the show, and why, in my opinion, my verdict is that this is for the novice, is because, you know, ultimately this play, The Real James Bond Was Dominican, is not about James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
It's what caught our eye. It maybe is what is exciting and interesting, but it's truly about Ruby.
Mm-hmm.
It's about Christopher Reeves and his relationship with this gentleman, but it's about his relationship with his race and his life and his story and how all these things kind of interweave together. So you don't really need to know who James Bond is because he's telling you everything you need to know mm-hmm. throughout the show. And I think it's beautiful.
I think I agree with you. It is for the novice, but this is one of those rare occasions where I'm like, this is for both the novice and the nostalgic for two completely different reasons. One, for let's start with the novice. Novice, you didn't need to know anything about James Bond. You just appreciate theater. Maybe you heard of James Bond and you're thinking, wow, that's an interesting take. Is he Dominican? What does that mean? There's enough in that title to get you asking a question and looking for an answer. He gives you the answer during the show. Mm-hmm. And that's what made it brilliant for a novice. He led you through the whole process, his whole thought process, his whole rationale. And it was brilliantly executed. It's also for the nostalgic for the exact reason that you said, which is it caught your eye. James Bond. That's mm-hmm. why we went. A nostalgic sees James Bond. They're like, I'm sold. Let's see what you got. And he brought something up that you had never heard of before. You didn't know about this guy.
I'm a novice.
You were a novice in that instance. But you are nostalgic. You are nostalgic in the James Bond community, and he added something that hadn't been discussed before. And that, I think, is why it's for both the nostalgic and the novice, because as nostalgics, we can talk to ad nauseum about the same thing. The conversations tend to repeat themselves. He brought in something that is new, that can be talked about with a novice and with a nostalgic, because of the novice is just learning and appreciating it. The nostalgic is adding it to their repertoire of knowledge and maybe refuting something or maybe agreeing with something. There's a conversation to be had for both parties. And that's why I think it actually is for both, for two completely different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
What was I going to say?
But is that what we do? I can't remember. I thought it was novice or nostalgic, and we like debate. Can you do both?
Yeah.
Since when?
Since today.
Yeah. I think we've done it before.
Yeah, we should. I think I am going to start for our new listeners, because we did get a couple new listeners. I do believe so. For new listeners, at the end of every episode, we discuss whether a James Bond movie, song, theme, whatever it is that we're discussing is for the novice or the nostalgic. Then we come to a verdict. And so this is exactly what we're just doing. I'm going to start explaining it, if that's cool with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Breaking the fourth wall. Here we are.
So the verdict is in. Margot was wrong. No, I'm kidding.
The verdict is in. Me, me, me.
The verdict is in. It is both.
It's both. I think it's for both. I think it's for everybody who appreciates theater. It's for everybody who appreciates Bond. And again, Christopher Rivas, sorry, I don't want to mispronounce his name. He did call me out at one point when Buena Vista Social Club started playing, and I was like, ooh, I love this song. It was a chan chan. And he, you know, I thought I was so like cultured because I knew this song, and he called it out in the play. He was like, I know, I get it. You love a Buena Vista Social Club. And I was like, ah, god damn it. Like, that's me. Yeah. And it was, anyways, it was great. Again, he poked fun where he needed to poke fun. Mm-hmm. He brought his audience in where he needed to bring it in. And he took it a step above by bringing up a conversation that I had never heard and you had never heard in the Bond community. And it was really interesting.
So, you know, if the show is traveling around and you walk by and you see a poster for it, look into it. Go check it out.
Yes.
See where it's playing. And it's definitely a good... squeeze.
Oh.
I was gonna say it's a good time, but I'm like,
you're
squeeze
like, wait
it.
A minute. Yep. Opportunity, low hanging fruit. Oh man.
But yeah, that about does it.
Yeah. We wanted to discuss it. I'm glad we did. I'm glad we went to see it. Highly recommend it for everybody else. But on that note, I wanna thank all of the new listeners that we've gotten. Just a few, but
Thank the old ones too.
And the old ones for sticking around, if you stuck around.
Thank the nostalgics for
that's right.
The the good squeeze nostalgics.
That's true, yeah. I do also, and I do want to thank the Inns Boys for coming on last week. I thought we just had a really very interesting conversation, and check out that last episode. Go check out their podcast as well. Check out Christopher Rivas and his work. Absolutely brilliantly talented individual, and it was a real privilege to see one of his works here in Pittsburgh. And you can find us on Instagram at A Good Squeeze, where we post updates, and that's about it on Instagram.
You can also find us on where you're listening to us. We're on Spotify. We're on Google Play. We're on Apple Podcasts. Mm-hmm. Anywhere you get your podcasts, we're there. Our main hub is Audioboom. And
leave us a comment. Leave us a review, please, and thank you. We want to know. You know, if it's a bad review, don't leave it. If it's a good review, leave it. we really appreciate it, and these things make a difference. So. Thank you.
But until next time.
I'm Margo.
I'm August.
And this has been?
It's your turn to do it.
No, it's not. I did it on purpose.
Let's do it at the same time.
Okay.
One, two, three. A good
squeeze.